Hello, everyone. Welcome to our very special coverage of a very special issue of comics. We are continuing to look at some Batman comics in advance and along with the new Penguin TV show. We are Uncanny Treks. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Tonight, we're looking at Robin, the Boy Wonder. Was it a five-issue miniseries, Matt?
Yes, Bob. It was a five-issue miniseries.
A five-issue, although they're pretty big issues. I think they're like 40 pages each. But a five-issue miniseries from Black Label. Matt, how are you doing this week?
I don't know, Bob. You're getting me addicted to these Black Label comics. I think I've read, like, several of them now. Heads up, this has been the best.
I like this a lot. I don't think I'm quite as over the moon for it as you are, but I like it a lot, too. And, yeah, Black Label's just a treat, man. Most of the mainline DC stuff right now, awful, terrible, frankly. I don't care. But at the same time, Black Label, I would say consistently for the past, I don't know how long it's been going, 5 years maybe? But for the past 5 years or so, just consistently been putting out some of the most interesting books in a long time.
They're interesting and they're going to skate for a little while, but you don't have to go back to the mainline continuity that you have to keep up with. That really kills DC. I don't think they realize that. Or maybe they do, but they just love it so much because they have to compete with Marvel.
I don't think it's continuity. Marvel has to follow continuity too, and for the most part, Marvel comics are pretty good right now. There's things I don't care for, but for the most part, it's pretty good. For whatever reason, DC just hasn't been able to execute in the past few years on the main titles.
Really, nothing worth reading that really sticks out to me, especially the stuff I'm reading now, like the stuff dropping now, this apps. I don't know if you're reading it at all.
No, Failsafe,
and the Brainiac thing. I don't know. I can't with it.
I like Mark Waid, man, but you couldn't pay me to read Absolute Power. The only main DC title I like right now is Kelly Thompson on Birds of Prey. She's doing a really good job. And when they started this incarnation of Dawn of DC a couple of years ago, they had a really good Doom Patrol miniseries that Chris Burnham and Dennis Culver were doing. That was good, but it was just a miniseries and they never followed up on it.
Well, let's talk about this comic, The Boy Wonder.
The Boy Wonder. So it's by Junie Ba. He's apparently a Senegalese French artist. I'd never heard of him before this series, but he has done some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics. And he also has an Image series called Monkey Meat. That sounds good. I'll probably be checking Monkey Meat out after reading this.
I'll probably check it out as well. I did not recognize his work on a TMNT, honestly. He doesn't really ring a bell.
It's pretty recent stuff, but I'm not really even sure what it is. We've got five issues here, and the five issues are basically about Damian, although it turns out, spoilers, and we're going to spoil a lot if you haven't read this, but you know, we have a hostage telling the guy who's holding them hostage a story, and initially we think the hostage may be Damian, and so each issue spotlights Damian's relationship with a different character. The first three issues are spotlighting Damian's relationship with a different Robin, right? So we've got a number one is Nightwing, number two, Red Hood, and number three, Red Robin.
Correct. And
number four seems more about Damian's relationship with his mother, Talia. And then number five, you could either maybe say it's about Damian himself, or maybe you could say it's about Damian's relationship with his grandfather, Ra's al Ghul.
I would say it's about pretty much the relationship with Ra's al Ghul. Bob, as you like to say, it's when things come to a head.
Yes. Things come to a head in issue number five. We'll be going through, maybe not page by page, but we will be trying to move through the five issues more or less in order. And so to start with early in issue one, Matt, did you think that was Damian tied up initially?
I mean, I did. He's wearing the Robin look. He's got the green pants. I just don't know why Damian would be wearing that outfit. It seems low-key for him.
We do see on the bottom of page six, there's a shadow behind the guy holding the kid hostage, and that shadow looks like Damian, right?
Right.
But it's also not clear, is that actually even real, or is it just an expressive touch of the artist at that point, which is cool.
He's on the next page. You've got the shadow of Batman behind all the Robins.
Exactly. And so on page 7, they give you the initial rundown. If you're not familiar of Nightwing, Red Hood, and Red Robin, they describe Nightwing as kind and brave. Red Hood is brash and rageful, and Red Robin is clever and resourceful. Did that seem about right to you for each of the three Robins?
Oh, yeah, that's right on. And don't you love how the Robins and the Ninja Turtles align so well, even the colors of their masks and stuff?
That makes me sad that you said that. That makes me sad.
Leonardo's blue, and Nightwing is more of the kind and the brave one. Leo, Nightwing blue, Leo blue.
So does that make Damian Michelangelo?
Damian's Michelangelo at this point.
Oh, Lord. I hate that I know that. So there's an interesting shift in this comic. If you've read the original comic where Damian returns, it's Batman and Son is the title of the first collection. It's a part of Grant Morrison's big run on Batman in the aughts and the 2010s. And in that, Damian, if I'm remembering correctly, and I think I am, he beheads minor supervillain the Spook and presents his head. But in this, it's just an average thief that young, confused, assassin-trained Damian beheads. And what did you think about that shift from him killing a supervillain to him just killing an everyday thief?
It's been a while since I've read Batman and Son, but it was the Spook for sure. I do remember that. And I like it better this way because it seems a little more powerful when it's just a random crime. It's not a villain.
I like the reactions. I didn't notice this the first couple times I read it, but looking at Batman's reaction to Damian doing it, Batman is mostly in shadow. And so the only way you know he's upset is the size of his eyes silhouette, and then also the way he's clenching his fist. It's really funny. Then you go on the next page, and it's Batman's disapproving. He's got the very narrowed, small eyes in his silhouette. It's very funny.
And the smirk on Damian when he first does it, thinking like his father's going to approve. The mouth, just not happy.
Move from a smirk to kind of gritting his teeth. It's a great little three panels. We get a different version of Nightwing and Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, in this comic than we usually do. Here we get them as like newly married couple, newly parents, and backing each other up and bantering about the babysitter and the groceries and what have you as they fight. What'd you think of this version of Nightwing and Barbara Gordon? In one sense, it's not a great departure, but in another sense, I think it's not really a version we've ever actually seen of either of them.
Yeah, it gave me some Artemis and Kid Flash vibes.
Yeah. We've got our Patreon show where we cover Young Justice, and yeah, there is some real similarity to Artemis and Kid Flash, although, spoilers for Young Justice, Kid Flash, he did, so
yes,
they never actually get to be the young parents in Young Justice.
Yeah, that's true, but you do get to see a little episode of what it could have been like. And so, with Nightwing and Batgirl, Bob, there's a banter that I think is hilarious. It's my favorite dialogue of this issue. She's like, "You remember to buy the baby formula?" And then Nightwing's, "Yep, and the money for the sitter." And then Batgirl's, "Awesome, thanks, honey." And they're fighting demons whilst doing this. They're throwing their weapons and doing all their kicking while saying this back and forth. I like that bit of dialogue.
No, that's good. That's good. And so Damian's been spying on them. He feels bad after having beheaded the average thief. And so he sees Clayface and wants to join in. And he doesn't really recognize, he thinks it's just the demon. He doesn't recognize that it's Clayface and doesn't really know the right way to go about going after Clayface. So this is on page 18. You see Damian swinging up on Clayface's arm and then kick him in the face. And you got a nice little lettering splat. But the thing is that because of Clayface's mud, basically, Damian gets stuck in Clayface's head. And then so in the next box, you have another splat, but there's a question mark after it. And I think that's my favorite visual for this issue. It's really funny.
That is hilarious watching Damian try to take out Clayface with a kick. Oh, that's not going to work, dude. Come on. This version of Damian doesn't seem like, he's so damn hot-headed. He's so much more like the other character we're going to get to in the next issue.
Indeed, indeed. And we also have some reflections, not just on Damian's trouble with Batman, but we also have some reflection on Dick's trouble with Batman, right? Nightwing's trouble with Batman. And so we see a flashback that's, I think, based on a falling out the guys have in the 80s in the comics where Dick storms out. And it's funny, Damian is, I guess, imagining this scene because he knows the bare bones of it. And then he has a little thing at the bottom of the page where the flashback is happening, where he's trying to reason it out. And he's like, Gotham needs a Batman. Batman needs a Robin. So how could Dick abandon Batman? I thought that was a great bit of dialogue. So my favorite visual is Damian failing to kick Clayface, and that would be my favorite line.
My favorite visual, Bob, is actually at the bottom of page 25. And you see Grayson reaching out for Batgirl, and on the other panel you see the flying Graysons reaching out for each other, and just having that comparison shot of like them doing the trapeze and then what Nightwing and Batgirl are doing now. I thought that was beautiful. It's just awesome job.
I didn't really pay much attention to that on the first couple reads, but it's really interesting. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody make that connection about Dick before in a comic, but it makes perfect sense, right? That he recreated the flying Graysons in his relationship with Barbara, and then also just in general with his relationship with the rest of the Bat family.
Yeah. And going back to Dick Grayson's arguments and things with Batman in the 80s, I just got done reading the first volume of Batman and the Outsiders. Well, I know that's not where that argument started. There is an issue that ties into that where there was a crossover between the Teen Titans and the Outsiders.
I read that, but I don't remember it very well. What goes on with it?
Well, the big thing is, Bob, Batman tries to, they're fighting some group of villains. Fearsome Five, yes. And Batman tries to take control of the group. It's Robin's team. Man, Dick stands up to Batman over and over and over again. That's the difference. That's the thing about Dick. Batman just wouldn't let him be himself. That's what you see with the comics here. I just think that they really captured that piece. And I do love, like, there's another visual, too, on page 23. I just want to highlight. Superman flying with Batman and a very young Dick Grayson, just happy as can be. He got the fun, the great Robin experience that the others didn't.
He was Robin when it was a little lighter to be Robin in the first few years of Batman.
Yes, I like how that's been visualized. You can see it in his face. You're hanging out with Superman.
I stopped reading it for other reasons, but apparently Mark Waid's current World's Finest run has done some interesting stuff with thinking about how we always say it's World's Finest, it's Batman and Superman, but if you read those original 1950s, 1960s comics, it's Superman, Batman, and Robin. It's always the three of them. It's not just the two of them.
Right.
And that's a good point to make. A little bit of headcanon I have, I just say, I do think you're right that the comics are a lot darker for all the other Robins. And so in some ways, they have a bit rougher of a time. But it also, to me, it always felt Batman was the most unreasonable to Dick. And then because he messes up with Dick so badly and Dick doesn't talk to him for a few years, I sometimes think that probably made Batman a better father and a better leader to the others, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, yeah. And you can see that growth.
Should we skip ahead to issue number 2, the Red Hood issue?
Let's take a look at issue number 2, Bob.
All right, Matt. So we lead off with your favorite visual, I think. What was that?
So, Bob, my favorite visual is there's a kid with a cereal box Red Hood mask on his head in the neighborhood, hanging out with Red Hood. Jason Todd is walking down the street. And there's some kid wearing his own homemade Red Hood mask that he made out of a cereal box. And he's shooting up the hallway. Red Hood's not living in a very nice area of Gotham, so it's weird. This kid, this is his hero. This is who he has to look up to.
Then his mother yanks him into the apartment when the actual Red Hood is coming. My favorite thing is just the next page after. I think that was on page 9. And my favorite thing is on page 10 when Red Hood enters his dumpy apartment. What a dump. And then B, it's cool because there's just a lot of trash strewn around Red Hood's dumpy apartment. And it's fun to look at all the little objects. There's files, there's empty bottles, there's a vodka bottle, there's empty cans, there's a Bible, there's a fan, there's empty boxes. It is a dump and it's very well done on the art.
Yeah. Did you catch the Batman Returns reference, Bob?
No, I was going to ask, what was that? That's on page 11, you said?
Yeah, there's the hell here on the side of the door.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that, but I didn't register.
Catwoman's neon sign, Bob, in her apartment. She bashes the letters, but she bashes the O, hello there. She bashes the T, which should have blown out the neon sign, but doesn't in the movie. It illuminates the hell here part.
I haven't seen Batman Returns in 10 years, although it is easily my favorite Batman movie. Not just because it was the one out when we were kids.
Bob's a huge Tim Burton fan.
I do like Tim Burton.
Yeah, I do too.
But I don't know why you're saying that to make fun of me. Some of this stuff sucks, of course. I'm not going to see the new Beetlejuice. I have some self-respect.
See, that's where you're wrong. Beetlejuice is going to be a fantastic movie when it comes streaming.
Not even Beetlejuice will get you into the theater these days.
Not even Beetlejuice. were tempted to do it. Okay, I don't want to go. I'm good.
Oh, man. So one question on these pages that did come up to me. On page 11, we have Red Hood grasping a Wayne Enterprises chocolate bar. And how do you feel about Wayne Enterprises making candy bars?
Okay, I guess to say this is a long shot, Bob, but there's this dude on Shark Tank. I don't know his name. He's some millionaire, billionaire, whatever, the insane amount of money that people make. And he makes these things called Kind Bars, K-I-N-D. It kind of makes me think that they're trying to, like, just throw that in there. That's the big pretend to be a millionaire thing or whatever in comic books. You make candy bars, not war machines.
I don't know what I want Wayne Enterprises to make or do. I'm one of those people who doesn't think you can have $1 billion and be an ethical person. But I was wondering, should Bruce Wayne, the heroic Bruce Wayne, really be making a candy that rots kids' teeth? I don't know if that's the best line of business for him. But you're right. Compared to being a weapons manufacturer, it's much better than being Tony Stark.
Yeah, and on top of this, Bob, there's the whole Charlie and the Chocolate Factory illusion they're trying to create with.
Yeah,
Bob, you get it now. Jason got a golden ticket.
Yeah, okay.
From Wayne Enterprises.
Matt, what I'm hearing is that your favorite movie is Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Is that what I'm hearing?
Apparently this author really likes Tim Burton on a second analytical read with you, Bob.
So, Matt, what was your favorite lie in this issue?
So my favorite bit of dialogue is on page 13, Jason telling Damien repeatedly that he's not going to help him, period. It's not happening. He just keeps telling him no, not happening.
It's that funny way you have to keep telling a child no.
Not happening. Damien's not used to hearing no. But then look on page 14, Bob. This is where it gets a little different for me, and this is why I like the Black Label, because there's a lot of things that are alluded to in these Black Label titles that they won't go full force with, and I'm just wondering if this is one of them. Are we supposed to think that he's all marked up from the Joker torture? If you look at Jason Todd's arms, mm-hmm. Are we supposed to think that maybe he's a former drug addict?
Because at the bottom of page 14, and the panel Matt's drawing our attention to, he is doing that junkie scratch. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, it could be either of those. I also wonder if you could maybe see it as the process of resurrection from in the Lazarus pit really messed him up. Maybe I was wondering if maybe we were supposed to think he was a cutter, self-harm.
Oh, so you haven't even gone in that direction. Yeah, so there's a lot of a lot going on there in that just one panel. Well, they're brilliant.
And I also wonder, you haven't read any of, like, so starting in the New 52, you had, I think it was Red Hood. I can't remember what it was, but you had a team book.
Red Hood the Outlaws.
Well, wasn't that the rebrand of it later? There's two Red Hood comics. There's the New 52 one and there's a DC Rebirth. And he's teamed up with other people, but it's not many other people, right? And so I kind of wonder if I had read those books, would I have more of a sense of, like, where Red Hood's character's at? Do they deal with him being an addict or with him, you know, being a cutter or something in those? I don't know.
Well, doesn't he hook up with, isn't he with Arsenal? Isn't Arsenal the one who's?
Yeah, I think the first version, it's Arsenal, Red Hood, and Starfire. And then in the second version for DC Rebirth, which is the one I think is called Red Hood and the Outlaws, that's basically supposed to be like the Dark Trinity. And so it's Red Hood, Bizarro, Superman, and then Artemis, who in the 90s was the Azrael for Wonder Woman.
For those of you who don't know, you know, Arsenal was a junkie, correct?
That's right. So my favorite line is also right around here, and it's Damien narration thinking about Red Hood. This is on page 16, and he says, that's the annoying part when you dislike someone who reminds you so much of yourself. I feel that in my life.
Oh, poor Bob.
So I also wanted to draw attention to how great the lettering is in this book. I think Jenny Bod does the lettering too. But here we have the flap of Rock's wings. It's a giant flap at the top of the page on page 18. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, you can see his huge wing just sticking out of the alley there.
Do we think Rock is supposed to be a new character? There is a Hawkman villain named Rock, which he could be this guy, or they could be totally unrelated. I'm not sure which I think.
I just go with this is some newer villain. I don't think this is the Hawkman villain.
Yeah, but he is very bird-like, though. He just wrecks house with Damien and with Red Hood for a bit. On 22, he trips Damien. And then on 24, he jabs Red Hood right in the eyes through his helmet with the two-finger poke. Those are both really cool images.
On page 23, for some reason, they wanted to go just a little more detail on Damien and on Jason's guns. The artist is simplistic in their drawings. There's not a ton of detail, but that's one area they did go into detail on, is like just the way his guns look.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And speaking of how simple but complex is, what was your favorite page, Matt?
Yeah, on page 32, one of my pet peeves for more recent DC is that we have a visually distinctive costume for the characters of Robin, Jason Todd, and Tim Drake when they were Robins. I always appreciate that. When we were growing up, Bob, Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, and then at the beginning of Tim Drake's career, they all wore that stupid green feathery thing, bathing suit outfit with the pixie boots.
I don't share your obsession with this.
It's a problem, Bob. It is a real problem.
I don't think it's such a problem. When you choose to get offended about it and when you don't, it's very weird timing. But as long as we're in your logic, I would just say, looking at the page on 32, that Jason Todd costume, I think you're right that we never saw Jason Todd in the 80s dressed like that, which doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
But to me, it does look like what I associate Tim Drake wearing in the 90s.
Yeah, it does look a lot more visually like Tim Drake. They're shifting what once was Drake's, and now we're just going to see Red Robin with the Tim Drake piece.
Before we leave, I just want to echo how cool Jason Todd's nightmare vision
is. That is freaky. There's eyeballs floating. His smile is floating in three different places.
He's almost like the Cheshire Cat.
And below that, you have this visually striking Batman with his cape flowing out, just engulfing Jason Todd at the very bottom of that page as well. Yeah. That page is awesome. Page 32. Let's take a look at issue number 3, which focuses on Red Robin.
We almost have Tim Drake being played as a James Bond character, real comfortable and chill and cool in his tuxedo. This is page 5. We see like a flashback or alternate image above him chilling in the limo in his tuxedo, the silhouette of Batman, and then it's a similar but slightly more detailed silhouette of Tim as Red Robin. And I might be wrong about this, but is current DC continuity that Tim Drake was never actually Robin? He was just always Red Robin?
I don't know, Bob. To me, it's so weird that all the Robins have had their origins retconned so often. We always just had this very distinct, this was Dick's origin, this was Jason, but that's so blurred, and I'm not sure. But see, when we were growing up, Bob, wasn't Tim Drake more just a kid with a photographic memory that just took a very big, huge interest in Batman after he saw a similar move being done, or acrobatic move that was done?
Yeah, although I will say, to me, and I've not read as many Tim Drake comics as I should have, but to me, the new version of Tim Drake that's on display here and sometimes in James Tynion's Detective Comics, he still feels a lot like the Tim Drake from when we were kids, to me at least.
He's so much more of Batman's ward in these comics to me. Where I just remember him, his father was still alive when we were reading the comics.
Yeah, they didn't kill him until, spoilers, Identity Crisis. A lot of that shifting of him being, you know, Bruce's adopted son happened right after that.
Correct. And I think that's a huge shift in the character that I'm just not as familiar with because I haven't read as much.
But it's also interesting because it almost exactly coincides with Damien coming in. Mm-hmm. It's a little before, but not too much before. And so his father dies, but then Damien comes in and Tim gets supplanted.
Right. And then that's when they decide to push the Red Robin character more so. And it's become the thing. It's Red Robin. Maybe we'll just go with it, Bob. Let's just say he just became Red Robin.
I like Tim Drake as a character. I think the Red Robin costume and outfit is crap, which is funny because on our Young Justice podcast, I'm the one always insisting on calling Tim Red Robin for clarity. I don't really like the name, though, and I really don't like the Alex Ross costume. I don't think it's a good
costume. Yes, the costume, I know originally was supposed to be like Michael Keaton's Batman, but Alex Ross drew it.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, I guess you're right.
The only reason I know this is because we had that, or one of us had a decent volume version of Kingdom Come that would talk about the art.
That never stuck with me. I looked at the back a lot. But yeah, to me, it also looks like a character. Do you remember Dr. Midnight from the Justice Society?
Yeah.
To me, it really looks like Dr. Midnight, but you're right that it looks like the Keaton Batman.
But yeah, they went with that leathery look, too, with the armor, which was...
Yeah, and the color scheme is very similar to the Dr. Midnight.
Now, the Red Robin we have here, though, Bob, that costume is... It evolved over time.
But to me, maybe I'm missing details, and I probably am, but to me, it still looks the same, and I just
It's more bird-like, in my opinion, whereas with that original look, it was supposed to be more just Batman without
ears. Oh, you're right. It has become more bird-like. That's a good point.
It's got the beak. It's more of a beak on the head, and the whole idea of wearing that look with the chest.
As a side note, at some point, I do want to make you read the Matt Wagner Dr. Midnight 3-issue miniseries from the late 90s and see if it's as good as I remember it being. We see this from Tim Drake talking to Damian on these pages. How do you feel about Wayne Enterprises, since we're questioning their business model, they're developing invisible headphones from Wonder Woman's invisible jet technology?
Bob, I would love to have invisible headphones because I would just listen to music all day in one ear and no one would know. Bob, but how do you feel about Cobblepot just straight down the side of the building, especially with the recent controversy of changing it to Cobb?
On the one hand, it's exactly what the Penguin would do. On the other, man, it really looks bad, which I mean is the point, but it looks bad, right? I do like that his skyscraper headquarters is called The Perch. That was a touch I liked.
That's fair. It's very grounded, Bob. I like it.
I'm going to say my favorite line is from page 7 when they walk into Penguin's party at The Perch. It's decorated with all these statues of the Justice League. And Damian's line is disgraceful. Using the League as tools for Penguin's own grandiosity, Father would despise being used for corrupt propaganda.
And there's a big ass statue of him right there with no head.
At this party, we've got Lex Luthor. We've got Maxwell Lord, who doesn't really look like Max Lord usually looks, which is fine. It's just an interesting variation. He's a little buffer and he's got flowing hair. And then we've got Veronica Kale. Do you know her?
No, I do not know Veronica Kale. And let me say this, Bob. Maxwell Lord is trying to look like the Lex Luthor from the Snyderverse. I'm getting those vibes from him.
Okay. No,
but going back to Veronica Kale, I don't have a clue who that is, Bob.
She's basically Wonder Woman's Lex Luthor. Greg Rucka invented her in his first run. She's not a bad character.
Oh, okay. You dig them using the Batman Returns Penguin here, Bob?
It's an interesting version. It's him more as a politician. I do like how from a distance his yellow teeth sort of look like a mustache.
The glasses. If Danny DeVito would have had those glasses nonstop, it would have rocked it.
So what was your favorite visual from this issue, Matt?
So, Bob, on page 15, you have this visual of Damian going through all the different air ducts. And there's just something about the maze and the way it's been drawn. I just love the way... Because it visualizes how insane it would be for him to have to go through all these ducks all on one page.
And at the bottom, you have him doing an og of frustration. Yeah. Very penguin-like. Can I offer a theory? Do you like this so much because it reminds you of like a maze page in a workbook?
Yes, I think so, Bob. I really do.
No, that's good. That's good. This comic reminds me a lot of City of Madness with some of the art techniques. I mean, obviously, Jenny Ba and Christian Ward are both great artists and both have very distinctive styles. But some of the more expressive and experiments with color in both of these do remind me of the two. And I also do think they're probably both influenced by Emily Carroll, who's this indie horror artist I like a lot. I talked about her a little when we were doing City of Madness a couple of weeks ago. And on page 19, when you have Damian confronting this bird demon, that to me, with especially the coloration and the lettering, looks like it's straight out of an Emily Carroll comic. So I just wanted to flag that.
Oh, yeah, that looks fantastic. Anytime any kind of demon is drawn here, whether it be symbolic or an actual thing Damian's fighting, it blows my mind. That's one of the best parts about this book is just the designs of these creatures and things. And how they've captured the whole demon aspect of it.
I hope this does well, and I hope DC has Jenny Ba doing more Black Label stuff, especially. I don't know if they would put him on a main title or not, but just give the man more miniseries and let him cook, I'd
say. All right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So on page 22, to fight the demon, we have both Red Robin and Damian getting out the bows. Did you pop for the double bows?
Oh, yeah, I did, Bob. See, that's our Robin. That's our Tim Drake right there, the bow stuff. That's what he brought to our Robin.
We love a man with a bow, don't we, folks? We love it.
That was how we knew the difference between the Robins back in the day, guys. He was the one with the bow stuff.
Well, and Tim Drake usually had a pretty distinct costume, unlike Jason Todd and Dick Grayson.
True.
So what was your favorite line, Matt?
So, Bob, my favorite line is on page 30, is when Batman was trying, it says, "Of course, it's a trick. Batman taught me to become what they want you to be. What better way to get their secrets, but to have to be careful." But you have to be careful.
That's a great panel, too, in that line, because you've got little Tim with an evil grin, hunched over a laptop with Robin insignia. And then you've got Batman as Matches Malone, but with the bat cowl over his arm.
Yeah, he's doing it the old school way, and Tim's doing it the new school way with the computers. Tim always good with the computers.
If you were in the room with me, I would stab you.
It's like he does with She's Bob, but if only his costume was what color? Purple. That's what we need. Purple Robin. Purple Bird.
Brutal, man. Brutal. But should we jump ahead to issue number 4, the Talia issue?
This one's all about dealing with mother issues.
Indeed, indeed. So to just begin early with my favorite image, this is definitely done in a style that's meant to look like an illustration on a tapestry or something similar. And we have Ra's drawn more or less as this like evil genie. And then we have a great panel at the bottom of page 6 where both Ra's and Talia are in shadows and Talia's standing next to Ra's demon throne. I really like that image.
My favorite visual is on page 9 where you see Ra's al Ghul and he's standing over Damian. Monsters in the background, Talia's in the background, and it looks like Ra's is about to sacrifice Damian. It's very scary looking, but just a full page look. I love that.
It's great. You got an owl guy, you've got a frog guy, you've got a guy with his face bandaged, you've got the headless guy, you've got two people with just eyes for heads.
It's freaking weird, but it's just supposed to show that Ra's is also a monster.
We see Ra's be deeply verbally and physically abusive to Talia and Damian in this comic, and it's terrible, but it's also awesome in just the evil power of it.
It's on character.
Yeah, it's very on character. So my favorite line is on 15. Ra's is like, "I'm getting weary, grandson. I place great expectations on you. But here you are, betraying them and tossing them away for the comforts of a silk pillow and the empty words of a capitalist dog. But there is still some use for you, a second option, should you disappoint."
My favorite line was on page 17, and it's where and Ra's says something similar. "How do you intend to go on fighting without me? No, we invested too much into this boy to let him go to waste. It is time, child. Why don't you finally give your life its purpose?" Ra's is evil in this issue. I love it. I love it. He captures Ra's.
He's got such good villain monologues. Mm. It's really powerful. And a few other things. We're talking about this one less, partly for sake of time, just because it kind of connects less with other DC continuity that we like to talk about. But I love like how well Junie Ba draws Damian's sword in this issue. Yeah. I love how well he draws the ninjas. There's a lot of Emily Carroll influence on Junie Ba, and I think that's right. But especially in this issue, I think you see a lot of Mike Mignola influence too, the guy who created Hellboy with the ghost of the guy Damian beheaded. And he has this conversation with him about getting over it. And that feels very Mike Mignola-esque.
Mm-hmm.
The thief just carrying his head. So yeah, there's a lot of Mike Mignola in this comic, and it's for the best.
And I really love, like, on page 31, this continued imagery of Damien's soul being represented by this demon himself, with the red.
Also something you see on Ra's at different points, too.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be that demon inside. I love that. Ah, oh, so cool.
You see it at the cover for issue number 5, too, right?
Right.
You got this great reflection in the pool of you seeing normal Damian, more or less, and normal Batman, although maybe that's supposed to be Damian as future Batman. And then you see little Robin ninjas.
Yeah.
To go ahead into 5, which we could say is the Ra's issue, or you could say is the Damian issue, there's a idea brought up on page 4 of issue number 5 that I'm tying Ra's deep into history. So we see him being blamed for both the fall of the Ming and the Bonaparte dynasties, which I think is pretty fun. I don't know that if that's ever been brought up. And if you want, bring up the time that Ra's was a Nazi in Greg Rucka and Klaus Janson's Death and the Maidens. But honestly, I'm glad they left it out.
Yeah, me too. And honestly, I love this is my favorite visual in this comic, is the aging of Ra's al Ghul as he gets more and more demonized, as he slowly ages over time. I love that visualization of his face. It's great.
Well, because you've got the Ming Ra's, and then you've got the Napoleon Bonaparte era Ra's. And then you have Ra's as he looks in the animated series, but looking a bit grayer than he usually does in the animated series. And then you have even him as this deranged, shirtless swordsman, looking the oldest at the bottom. It's great.
That's a beautiful visual.
Speaking of Ra's just absolutely being utterly awful to Damien in the dialogue, which is just so, so well written. On page 10, I've got my favorite line of Ra's saying, "Oh, how nice." Speaking of Batman, Talia, and Damien, the father, the mother, and the mistake.
Bob, this right here, best line ever. That right there won this issue.
Damien's a hero because he keeps going after that line. He doesn't just curl up and cry.
Perfect placement of the way it's paneled. You've got the father. It just zooms in on Batman. The mother zooms in on this Talia. This isn't the Talia that's trying to impress Bruce Wayne like you usually see. This is motherly Talia. And then you have in the mistake with Damien. You can just tell through his eyes and his forehead. It's all, wrinkled up.
That's great. That's great. My favorite visual is right after this in the fight scene between Ra's, Talia, and Damien. And so you've got three panels on the bottom of page 14. And the lettering and the visuals here are just great. There's the clap as Ra's catches Damien's sword with his two hands. There's the clack of him breaking the sword. And then there's the chic of him still with the tip of the sword in between his two hands, just stabbing it into Talia's forearm.
Ugh.
Oh, it's brutal.
Yes, extremely brutal. The dude draws action scenes too, Bob, in a way that's, it's cartoony, but it's still effective. I mean, these images are not realistic.
It's definitely going for expressive or cartoony or stylized, right?
Right.
On page 31, you initially confused me a little bit, Matt. What were you saying here?
Well, let's see what's on page 31, Bob. Oh, so Bob, at the very end of the issue, everybody gets together. Everything comes to a head. And all the Robins all get together. And you see this beautiful full page spread of them flying off. I was thinking, seems like an advertisement for Gotham Knights, the video game.
Ah, thank you. When I first read it, I was like, Gotham Knights, the comic by Devin Grayson? No. Gotham Knights, the hockey team in Gotham?
No,
I always forget. Gotham Knights, the TV show? No, Gotham Knights, the video game.
I get to the end, I got to go download that game now. I've already beat it once. I got to go play it again. I got to be a Robin.
I would really love to see Jeannie Bod do more with any of the Batman family, or again, anything else he wants to do.
Bob, where are we going to rank this as far as looking at where this falls in our rankings?
Much as I love Suicide Squad, Get Joker is not Alex Maleev's best work. I think it's good work from Maleev, but it's not his best work. And so I could definitely see Jeannie Bod's thing going over Suicide Squad, Get Joker. I guess to run down our list for listeners, this is just comics we've covered. Number one is John Hickman, Steve Epting's Fantastic Four. Number two is Sanford Green and John Hickman's one-shot Doom issue. Number three is Batman City of Madness by Christian Ward. Number four is Suicide Squad, Get Joker by Brian Azzarello and Alex Maleev. And number six is The Werewolf by Night one-shot from last year by Derek Landry and Fran Gehlen. Not a bad comic, just happens to not be the strongest. So a good comic. But I don't know. I could see it going above Get Joker. I'm torn about whether it goes over City of Madness or not.
I am too, Bob. After going back and looking at the rankings again, I definitely want to put it below anything we've done over Hickman. It's definitely either going to be in that number three or number four spot.
I can see strong arguments for putting it above John Hickman's Doom. At the same time, as much as I liked this comic and it moved me, I think Doom moved me a little more. I think you were saying you wanted to put it above City of Madness, right?
Yeah, I was originally going in that direction, but then I don't know. Looking back at it, I don't know for sure. This is difficult already, even when we have this small number of comics.
I do think maybe there's a way in which there's a stronger cohesiveness to what's been done. I think there's slightly more stronger cohesiveness to Boy Wonder than City of Madness, now that I think about it. But I think I would be okay with Boy Wonder above City of Madness.
Okay, let's go for that, Bob. Let's put it that way.
Both are great comics. If you haven't read City of Madness or Boy Wonder, go read them. I think the hardcover for City of Madness just came out.
So, Bob, would you ever consider maybe we have an episode where we go through some things that, like, we both have read recently and maybe try to rank them as well? Or do you just want to do episode-to-episode coverage?
I do like only putting stuff we've discussed on the list, but there's something to think about there. Maybe we don't need to discuss everything as intently as we have the six things on our list, if that makes sense.
Yes, that does make sense. I was just curious. When I think about rankings, I'm to the point now where on Goodreads, if I give it a 3, it means I would recommend it. It's going to be fine. If I give it a 4, it's, I want to read more from this guy. And if I give it a 5, it's, whoa, this was really great.
Well, I used to be a lot stingier with 5-star rankings. But lately I've seen, I don't know, I think it's partly just this weird app culture we live in. There's just something where I've started reevaluating it. If I feel like I really enjoyed something and it mostly does what it set out to do, I've started more giving 5 stars for that, if that makes sense.
Oh, wow. Okay. See, that's going to make me have to readjust the way I think, because I just established that in my brain.
Well, and sometimes it's political, right? I don't know if I actually did give Suicide Squad Get Joker 5 stars on Goodreads. What if I did? It was because it was probably sitting at like a 2-star average ranking, and I wanted to correct that. Because I think haters like you were dragging it.
Man, not my favorite. Oh, man.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Uncanny Treks. Thank you for joining us as we covered Boy Wonder. Check it out. Check City of Madness out. Both great comics. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Great night, everyone.
Thank you for listening.